What the Health with George Bertineau on Foobar Radio.
Bonjour and welcome to What the Health on Foobar Radio with me, George Bertineau. You may know me from my time on Married at First Sight or potentially for dressing up as a baguette on Instagram teaching health and fitness. But I am actually an online health and fitness coach, a qualified one at that, and I'm determined to cut through the bullshit advice and fitness misinformation floating around the internet. Now, Christmas is near, people, which means lots of food, lots of excuses, but the main thing about December is if you can maintain weight, you've done really, really good, because most months of the year, you're probably putting on some weight. Simple things to do are enjoy yourself, have fun, drink alcohol, get your steps in, and just deal with it after the Christmas period. Now, each week I am joined by expert guests as we dissect trends and we bust myths. So, for today's show, our first guest is Kenny Logan, and I spoke to him earlier this week about his experience with prostate cancer. Joining me now is former Scottish rugby union legend Kenny Logan, who is sharing his experience of being diagnosed with prostate cancer aged 49. Kenny, good morning. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for asking. Right, we're going to dive straight into this because this is a super hot topic and also interesting topic as well. So for those of you who may not know your story, can you take us back to when you first learned you had prostate cancer?
So I had no symptoms of prostate cancer. I didn't know anything about prostate cancer, really, apart from you saw people on the TV with the little man, commentators and stuff like that. So I didn't really know much about prostate cancer. But what I had, my first sort of... was listening to my wife's podcast called The Midpoint. It was all about midlife, and listened to Davina McCall talking about her midlife, or going through menopause. And I listened to that and came in after my dog walk and said, it was Saturday morning, I said, God, that sounds horrific. I said, what are we going through if that's what women are going through? Mm. And Gabby said, well, you should, why don't you just go get yourself tested? And actually, rather than just going, yeah, I'll do it, I actually did do it. So I thought, I'm going to get myself like a Wellman test. I got a Wellman test back, and it was about 2 weeks later or whatever it was. And so your bloods are good, but your prostate PSA level's a bit high. And I was like, oh, what does that mean? He goes, well, you maybe should just go and get checked with a GP. So go and get checked with the GP. He goes, right, we probably should refer you. So I get referred. And then he said, look, we're going to do a biopsy. So they did a biopsy and they said, you've got a little bit of cancer there, but it's not doing anything. So don't worry about it. We're on it. We've caught it at the right time because you came to us and we'll monitor you. So he said, so I said to my surgeon, my specialist, I said, what happens? How long do you monitor me for? Is it a couple of years or is it weeks? He went, oh, no, he said, we could be monitoring you for the next 10 years. It could be the next month, the next couple of years. I've just got to see what happens, but don't worry about it. We've got it at the right time and we're in control. So I thought, fine. Didn't think about much. Did my blood test every 6 weeks. Every 6 months, I did my blood test. And 18 months into me being monitored, he said, we're going to do another biopsy because your blood's marker, your PSA has gone up. So up to like 7.5 or something like that. And then suddenly, done the biopsy, cancer's now spread through the prostate. We probably need to get it out, or we need to have brachytherapy or radiotherapy. So that was a real sort of like, you've got prostate cancer, but we can do something about it, and I think we've got it at the right time. It's quite a big shock, because you can imagine, you're a fit individual all your life, and you don't, and then suddenly you do a bit of Googling, and 1 in 8 people who are white get cancer, 1 in 4 black people get cancer. Then you start to go, my God, 55,000 people a year are diagnosed, 12,000 people die of it every year. And you're like, wow, this is quite big numbers.
Yeah.
And then you sort of, you get sort of really, how lucky am I? You start thinking, I'm going to be all right. And you go through all these things. And then obviously I then decided to get the prostate taken out, which was, an operation, which is, it's quite an invasive operation. It's, you know, you have to, after you've had the operation, it's, you're a bit sore and you have a bag to take your urine, which is uncomfortable, but you hope that all the prostate is out, and they hope the cancer's gone. And I was very lucky that you get tested after that and everything's gone, so you still got to get monitored, but at the same time it's a big thing to go through. But I look back and go, thank God I listened to my wife's podcast. Thank God I went to get checked, and the amount of men have come to me and wives have said to me, my husband listens to you on the radio, or he's listened to your wife's podcast, he's going to get tested, he's now getting monitored, and thank you so much. And so today is all about that. You know, I'm very lucky that Johnson & Johnson are launching a prostate cancer Don't Wing It campaign. So that's me trying to tell people that, you know, go and get tested, go to your GP, or even better, go to Prostate Cancer UK Risk Checker and just get do something, get yourself front foot and thinking about it.
So your core message is exactly that. Go and get tested go and do something about it. Because men are still so hesitant to talk to their GPs. Like, why do you think it is? Do you think it's still, we go on about it, the stigmatism. Do you think it's still?
Well, there's no stigma, right? I think everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to get a GP and he's going to, and suddenly I'm going to feel very uncomfortable. It's a blood test. And if you've got to get the next thing that's with the hazard that somebody's going to get inspected with your finger, that is because maybe you need to get it done. So I'd rather do that than not go and get tested. So the first thing is the blood test. But as I say, you can go to the Risk Checker, Prostate Cancer UK, and that gives you an idea if it's in the family. If you got, you know, for me, you know, for my situation now, for my son, he will, you know, his dad had prostate cancer, so potentially, you know, he might be at risk, but he will get checked earlier. And that's really important. It's really important that you just, I think if you're thinking about it and men are talking about it, you know, I know from a point of view of me coming out talking about it, and a lot of my mates going, oh, I'm going to go and get checked. And I'll say to them, have you been checked yet? Oh, no, I'm going to do it next week. So you said that last month. Go and get checked. Mm-hmm. So you need to take responsibility. And I think one thing I would say to men, my surgeon said to me, it's a silent cancer. You need to go looking for it. But you can find it. And if you find it and you find it like I did, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, no symptoms at all. Yeah. And, you know, has it completely changed the way you kind of look after your own health? Because you've been deeply connected with fitness for many years, right? So did it change your training, your exercise, your recovery at all?
It's definitely, you know, I remember saying to the doctor, the specialist, I said, can I have done anything different? Is it diet? Is it, you know, what could I have done for training wise? It was nothing to do with that. And it was just one of these things. And that prostate cancer is that cancer. It's just one of these things.
Okay. So how important do you think physical fitness is in regards to supporting men's health more broadly?
Right. You know? So physical fitness is important across the board. Everything from your well-being, mental health, everything. You know, don't stop training. You know, some people might not train much, but you can go and walk. You can go for a cycle. You can do some weights. You know, weights is very important now because of keeping your body strong and your ligaments and your joints. So exercise is so important. And it's also good to show your children that how important exercise and good food. And keep an eye on your lifestyle. And I think this is when you get to 45, 50, you're sort of going, right, I need to think about get my prostate checked, because that if we don't get it checked and it comes and you've got symptoms, that's a different, because it's going to be a different conversation with your surgeon and your family potentially. So just go and get tested, you know, go and get a blood test and speak about it, speak to your mates about it, and just, you know, don't ignore it.
So speaking of, like you said, not ignoring it, what role did your family, your ex-teammates and your kind of rugby community play in, you know, being your support system?
So I kept it reasonably quiet. I didn't tell my mum until I'd all done and dusted, because my mum was 90 odd. She didn't need the hassle of worrying about me. I told some teammates, but not huge. I told my family, my brothers and cousins, have you been tested? No, go and get tested. And the other thing is, we must remember, it's every year. You got to test every year. It's not just a one-off test. You've got to get tested every year. It's like it's your MOT, right? You can't drive around a car without an MOT insurance. It's the exact same. You shouldn't be able to walk around without being tested. So make sure, get tested. That's a key thing. I think I've mentioned that on this podcast. But, you know, so my wife, you know, her podcast changed my life and probably saved my life, you know, because I wasn't thinking about getting a prostate check. It was not in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. And I think everything kind of happens for a reason, right? And it's kind of totally. You hearing that and you thinking about it all of a sudden kind of just triggers something in you to go and get tested. Now, you know, I know you said you said it multiple times, but it's important to remind people and to reiterate that testing is super important. And, you know, we can talk about it till we're blue in the face, but we have to do something about it. Now, how did you deal with kind of emotional barriers, you know, towards it all?
I went into a lot of sports mode in my own head. I thought, right, this is like an injury. You've got to get through it. It's a setback. You've been dropped or, you know, you're not being picked and you've just got to be positive. So I was very positive. I created a good mindset around me. My kids were, I said, don't keep saying to me, are you all right, Dad? You're all right, Dad. I'll tell you what's happening. And they were like, fine, yeah. So we tried to carry on as normal life as possible. And actually, I would say we were very normal. They knew I went to get the blood tests. And they went, how was it? I went, yeah, it's fine, great. And that was it. We just were being very focused in our mindset about staying positive. Now, I know that's not easy for everyone. It's probably easy for me because of my background and my sport, but it's really important for people around you to be positive. And I think negativity can creep in, but you've got a good, you know, my sort of main thing I always go back to, and I know I'm harping on, is I got it at the right time. I went to get tested when Gabby said, go and get tested. I listened to my wife, you know. I don't do it all the time, but I keep that quiet. But, you know, I listened to her and I thought, you know, I'm going to do something about it. When maybe other things, you just wouldn't do it. So listen to the people around you. I mean, I'm saying to all men and women and children, you've all got a husband, you've all got a dad, you've all got somebody who you care about who's got a prostate. Mm-hmm. Ask them, have they been checked? And simple little things, and if they haven't, you know, push them to get checked, and to get it at the right time, they're laughing. It's a positive, not a negative.
Yeah, really, really is. And are there any practical steps men can take today to, you know, check what, you know, risk there is, or maybe start the conversation with their GP?
So the first thing I would do after listening to this, I would go to Prostate Cancer UK Risk Checker. I would do that, and then that will take you through all the questions. And then you can then be pushed in the right direction of where you need to go next. And that could be to your GP or, I mean, I'm not a specialist, obviously, but the best thing is to get a blood test from your doctor. But use the risk checker and cancer, the Prostate Cancer UK.
And that was Prostate Risk Checker.
So Prostate Cancer UK Risk Checker.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. We'll make sure we get that put in the information of the episode as well. What changes would you like to see in the UK's approach to prostate cancer testing awareness kind of over the next few years? Because, you know, a lot has happened since the start, but, you know, what do you feel there are other changes they can make?
Yeah, the National Screening Committee have said they're not going to do a national screening. They'll screen certain people at certain situations where, you know, certain risks of genetics. And I think from our point of view is we would like everybody to be screened at a certain age, 50 or 45 years old. I know prostate cancer, I mean, I'm disappointed it's not happened, but I know that they are in talks with them about showing different screening ways to make it easier, more cost-effective. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key. We've got to work together and work on, hopefully in the next 2 years or next year, whatever, that we can have these 55,000. And people are saying that we could be raising, it could be 15% more people will be at risk on top of the 55,000 people who are diagnosed every year. And 12,000 are dying. So, like, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of families suffering. for they could go and get tested, and then stop that suffering could change. We could, you know, we could, that number could be such a different number.
Yeah, really, really could. Like you said, if we can make something actually mandatory, or you know, as part of the government to sort it out, that would be, that would save so many lives and change so much.
Yeah.
Right. Final question for you, Kenny. What's the single message you hope men can walk away with from hearing your story today?
My single message would be, go off your arse and go and get tested. Don't say it's not going to happen to me, and don't say I'll do it tomorrow. The best thing to do is phone up your doctors or go onto the website, Prostate Cancer UK Risk Checker. Do something about it. Don't think it's going to happen to you. Don't think, I should say, don't think it's not going to happen to you, because it might. Because remember, 1 in 8 people, white men, and 1 in 4 black men. So get a finger out and go and get tested.
Amazing. Honestly, thank you so much for your time. Really, really, really insightful information. And just thank you again. I hope you have a great rest of your day. And you we appreciate your time.
Keep on the weights, big man.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you, Kenny. Cheers. Bye-bye.
And I do exactly that. I do keep on the weights. Amazing interview with Kenny. So thank you very much for his time. Guys, the link for the website will be in the description of this episode. Coming up after this short break, I'll be speaking with trichologist and hair transplant expert Marie Royce Book.
FUBAR Radio. That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
You might then see friends, family that require a little bit of support, financial advice. How do you go about sharing that advice, sharing that support without being condescending?
A practical tip that everyone can do that is low friction: send them financial content that you like. If you have a favorite content creator, if you see an article that you like, send them the video and just ask them, what do you think? And then that can begin a conversation around it.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
Is the sound of your mates alive? Is getting to more gigs this year and the next? Is the sound of saying, I got you, mate? Is the sound of mates enjoying even more of this? Is the sound of mates getting home instead of here? Click your seatbelt, because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over, to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When is too early to say I love you? Soph said it the night we met.
Yeah. I did. Right, okay, right. Let's just clear this up, right? When I said I love you, I remember I said it in the car.
In the cab, yeah.
In the cab. And I was like, oh my God, I love you.
Yeah, well, that was the day I made you my girlfriend, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said I love you and you were like, I love you too. And I was like, I love you, 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 I love you so much, I love you so much, oh my God, I love you.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
We store so much of our trauma and our energy in our body. I am just incredibly, incredibly tired of keeping this trauma locked inside my body. And so all I needed to do is release it. You know, it's like going on a bender and drinking too much booze and you throw it up, because you just need to get that out of your system, because it's gonna catch up with you at some point if you don't.
Follow us at What The Health Show for more with George. This is What The Health.
This is What The Health on FUBAR Radio with me, George Bertineau. Joining me now to chat about hair, eyebrows and even pube transplants is trichologist from Wimpole Clinic, Marie Royce Book, good morning. How are you? Okay.
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you. A bit envious of your Christmas hat.
Are you? I actually have a spare one.
Oh, should I teleport it over?
Just throw it over there for you. Right, so how's your morning been so far? Good?
Really well. Just checked in a patient. An exciting pubic or eyebrow today. So just a male hair transplant ready to embark on his hair restoration. So a straightforward one this morning.
Amazing. Well, maybe that's why I'm wearing my Christmas hat, because, you know, maybe I need a hair
no
transplant.
Judgment here.
No judgment. It's okay. Right. So you are known as one of the UK's leading brow designers and hair consultants. What first drew you into this kind of very specialised area of hair restoration?
I think actually it being one of my own journeys. So I always say to people who come to see me that I know how they feel because I was once them in their chair. Unfortunately, I didn't have the support that I felt I needed. It's a really largely male-dominated industry. So I went in with a lot of faith and sort of bolded in and tried to implement things a bit better to make it a bit more relatable for females and something that I knew could help women through their hair loss journey, whether that be, of course, it started with eyebrows, whether that be through brows, through hair loss and onto pubic hair loss also.
Which we will cover all of this in the interview. Yeah. I'm intrigued by lots of this because it's such a big topic and it's, you know, it's become bigger and bigger over the past few years. Now, do you think there is a drive coming from social media and how we spend so many hours on social media compared to potentially before? Or do you think it's just purely because aesthetics is a bigger thing now, more people kind of want to fix things that maybe they aren't happy with?
I think hair loss has such a huge history, and historically we've always been changing our hair, but something that has remained is genetic hair loss, especially with men, and somewhat inevitable. And you know, previously men would wear wigs and that was acceptable, and you know, in recent times, especially British, you know, it was a little bit taboo even considering having a hair transplant. But now I agree, through social media, through more people being open and comfortable with it, people are now exploring ways to get their hair back. So it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. I have a 7-year-old son, and just yesterday he asked me if he was going bald, and it's a concerning topic because I know that's coming from social media. Because I also see parents bringing their sons as young as 13 with similar concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's obviously other options and stuff, but I guess we're here to talk about this. So let's quickly go on to, obviously, an area of specialty. So it's your eyebrow transplant. So for people who don't know, can you briefly explain how an eyebrow transplant actually works?
Of course. So an eyebrow hair transplant is really similar to having a hair transplant on your head. It is a little bit more specialized. So it's a minor cosmetic procedure. In a sense, it's done at the clinic. I work at the Wimpole Clinic, and we have two particular methods where we remove the hair. So we borrow hair. Well, I say borrow, but we actually remove the entire follicle from the back of one's head. And this is prepared using microscopes and trimmed, and then in preparation for it being relocated onto the eyebrows. I will map and design the brows with the patient prior to the surgery part, where we the doctor makes incisions. Incisions are little holes that are put on the eyebrows, and then that essentially is where the grafts are then placed into the eyebrows. So we are reconstructing a brow. We can put hair anywhere there wasn't hair before. So lots of people are worried that, oh, but you know, I've got no more hair there. Will this work? It does work, and we can transplant it hair from your scalp into your eyebrows. We can also use alternative body hair. So for men who do not have donor hair at the back of the head, we can take a little bit of hair from below their chin. We can take chest hair, and we can also take pubic hair.
So a question that is running through my mind is, if you're taking hair from, let's just say, the back of the head, do you have to, because the hair on our heads grows quicker than other areas, right? And you can correct me if I am wrong. Would you have to trim, shape, cut the eyebrow, or will it naturally kind of, I don't know, not grow too long?
So the main point of mapping, so outlining the perimeter of the, of the eyebrow shape before the surgery, is so important because the brow shape should only grow within the area we've placed the brow. So we map on a beautiful shape that will be timeless for you. But yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, if you want, if I wanted to grow my hair from April to October, I could have wonderful long eyebrows. I mean, will continuously grow.
Hey, if we push it on social media, anything's possible. Remember that. Lots of people want lots of things.
They would try. I think they would try.
Yes. So,
regular trimming is absolutely encouraged. So, at least once or twice a week.
Okay. Nice. And who is an ideal candidate for an eyebrow transplant? Are there people you advise against the procedure?
There are people we advise against the procedure. Some people have, unfortunately, autoimmune conditions, and this is where they have lost their eyebrows or hair due to a condition where the body is essentially attacking the follicles. And so this wouldn't be an appropriate procedure for them because the body would behave the same and essentially reject the eyebrow hair transplant. But for people who are wanting a more permanent aesthetic restoration and are tired of, you know, yearly microblading sessions, or even people who are constantly drawing on their eyebrows, they, you know, this is a great solution for them. And I'm just speaking about women right now, but I have many male patients who do brow restorations also, because makeup on men is not you know, some men they don't, it doesn't look as natural on them, so you know they're looking for natural solutions.
Well, I know where I need to go if ever I cut an eyebrow off, or I shave it off, or have any eyebrow issues, because
scar.
Have a scar on my eyebrow. I walked into a marble table when I was like 2 years old. So
very common, very common.
Yes.
Yeah, they don't like it, and they come and say, "Can you feel this scar?" And of course, we can do that.
Oh, I just, you know, I say I got hit with something. We'll make a cool story out of it. Right. Are there any big misconceptions you hear about eyebrow transplants?
Yes, I think so. Some of the misconceptions are very similar to, I can imagine, other cosmetic procedures, is they'll come in and they'll show a beautiful and highly edited picture of a celebrity with, you know, an almost AI looking eyebrow, and they want exactly like this. So it's really about managing expectations.
Yeah.
We can move hair and help it look as natural as possible, but the eyebrow hair transplants are never going to look exactly like the ones that you were born with, simply because the scalp hair is thicker than natural eyebrow hairs in caliber. Of course, you're cutting the hair, so they're always going to have a blunt end. We can't even make them really as thick as they naturally would have been. So, you know, it's about managing expectations in that sense.
Okay.
And also borrowing hair, you know, can I borrow hair from a family member or something? No.
Can't that get rejected from your body because it's not like the same DNA? I know it has similar strands, but it can get rejected, right?
Yeah, it can. It would be attacked. I once had a patient who came in with a cup full of hair she'd saved.
Oh, wow.
And she thought that brow hair, she thought that I could put them back in.
Oh,
so you can't do that either.
So anyone who's listening, if you're trying to collect hair that you have lost, do not take it to your local clinic for hair transplants or eyebrow transplants. Right. Elephant in the room. Pubic hair transplants. Never heard of this before. A lot of people probably don't realize that this is even a thing. So how common is the procedure? Do you have percentages on men and women? Is it, I don't know. I'm super confused by this, but I'm super interested.
It's really quite a sort of underground society, it feels like, because the want is there. We do this, I would say, you know, not as frequently as we do brows, beard, and hair transplant, but the request is there. There is a want for it, predominantly females. The reasons for these women having to want their pubic hair back is for a number of reasons, mainly from permanently removing their pubic hair, and wherever they are in their life, they want their pubic hair back for whatever reason. It might be a relationship ending. It might be a new relationship wanting it. It might be empowerment for the woman just wanting to restore what she feels is natural. I think that's the main point. These women, they have removed it in a point of their lives and they actually regret it and they want it back.
Okay. So would it be the same as eyebrows, for example?
Yeah, it is, yes.
It gets mapped. So, it gets, you can get your own, like a,
we design it,
like,
yes,
a jazzle, but it's a design, it's a whatever you want. It's a, okay, interesting, yes. Okay, so why do people seek hair transplants, do you think? Is it because of, sorry, pubic hair transplants, like, yes, you said, aesthetics? There's a mix of medical as well, like you said. Is it purely, like you said, just down to previous relationships or, you know, having it removed? You know, is it always, I mean, they might not tell you, but I'm guessing, is it medical, aesthetic?
I haven't had somebody come to me with it being more medical. So medically being usually a scar, there'd be a scar down there that they want to have covered, and or perhaps the hair doesn't grow where there's a scar. That is common in hair transplants, but I've yet to have somebody come for a pubic hair transplant for that reason.
Okay.
The majority of the females that are coming for their pubic hair restoration is because they've either lasered all their hair off,
okay,
and have grown out of that phase, yeah, grown out of that trend, grown out of that ideal sort of look, and they want their bikini back.
Yeah,
okay. I've had women who have naturally sparse hair, so not very thick and dense looking pubic areas, and they wanted a fuller looking bikini area. So many different reasons, I think.
Okay, now I'm sure there's probably like a nervous laugh when people kind of hear the whole pubic transplant and stuff, but is there one myth you would love to debunk straight away about pubic hair transplants, if there are any?
That I think that it is solely to do with a partner. I think everybody thinks and they assumes it's because of a partner, has a fetish perhaps, or has a want for that, and the woman is doing it solely for a partner or boyfriend. It's not what I see in clinic. It really is an empowering statement for a lot of these women, wanting to go back to what they originally had. I think when we think about hair restoration, it really falls easily into a category of perhaps vanity. But hair is something we all have. And when you lose it, you simply want it back. And I think that is the same idea when we think about pubic hair.
Well, I mean, you can look at so many people, right? You get a haircut and it's like, oh my God, you look so different, you know, or oh, you've grown your hair. Or so, I mean, I'm not sure if it works like that with pubic hair, but I'm assuming, you know, we've all had hair and we all have hair. So, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Are results permanent, and what can patients realistically expect with all sorts of transplants?
Yes. Hair transplants are permanent. So the area in which we take the hair from the donor area, which is the back of the head, these follicles are DHT resistant. That is a compound which is responsible for female and male pattern hair loss.
Okay.
So because of that, these hairs, they will last you for the rest of your life. Illnesses can happen.
Yeah.
If that does happen, then they're not, they will lose. You will lose those hairs,
yes,
if that were to,
yes,
happen.
Yes, yes.
But in essence, that it is a permanent procedure. So when we relocate those hairs, they do behave the same, and they will be with that person for the rest of their life, hopefully.
Okay. And the recovery process, is it similar? Are they all kind of similar, or is there kind of special considerations given, you know, hair or head versus You said the pubic. You said
the pubic hair transplant is quite an elaborate recovery. So as you can imagine, the pubic area is on the top mm-hmm. of the mons pubis. And so immediately after the surgery, we cannot risk any clothing or underwear touching that area. So we provide the patients with these sort of old fashioned petticoats, and they're encouraged to bring a big, you know, round skirt so that no fabric is touching that area when they leave the clinic. And then they're instructed to, you know, go home, recommended to go home by car if possible. And as soon as they get home, lay down with no underwear and try and keep that area free for at least 48 hours to allow it to not avoid any risk of dislodging those hairs we put in. Because it is a very long day, you know, 6 hours in clinic, and to go home and accidentally swipe it off or, you know, or lose those grafts, you'd be devastated. So it is a very, very strict post-op instruction.
Yeah, so it's like, I don't know why, but when you tell me about the petticoat, I just couldn't stop thinking about, you know, when animals and pets go to the vets and they have a little cone around their heads? The cone of shame. Obviously, it's not the cone of shame, but it's kind of like the same concept, isn't it? You're basically putting something to stop anything touching. Obviously, with animals, it's a little bit different. Yeah. It's so they don't lick wounds or whatever, but same kind of concept. Yeah. So, okay. And
with the beard, you know, we ask people not to talk too much. So with the pubic hair, we offer not to walk too much initially.
Yeah, no sexual activities as well, no doubt. For a little while.
No, absolutely.
Okay. You've seen life-changing transformations. Is there one patient story that stays with you?
I have a few. I think with the eyebrows, I had a patient, she very similar to my own, years of microblading, being very self-conscious, never going out without makeup on her brows. And we did her eyebrows back in 2021. And when she came to see me a year later, she had completely, you know, her life had completely changed. And she was so thankful for the procedure because, you know, she found her confidence back. And so she got a new job. She found a husband. She was pregnant. It was a really lovely story to hear and be a part of, I think. And I think with male hair transformations, they are really powerful in a sense of it's not often spoken about how hair loss with men affects their well-being and their mental health. And I've met men who go to the most extreme hairstyles to maintain, you know, the image of them not losing their hair. Mm. And this can be from, you know, going to bed with a hat on and a whole can of hairspray to glue the hairs in place, and these really, really elaborate sort of hairstyles to conceal that. And for them to finally have hair in it, to not even be, you know, a thought in their mind anymore, and they can just move on with their lives and they have this confidence back. There's so many stories, you know. We've definitely seen lots of stories like that with everyday people, celebrities. We see all of it.
I have no doubt, and I love to hear that. I mean, I've been offered my fair share, I think 4 maybe 5 from different clinics and stuff. I don't feel like I need it. I feel like I've got lots of hair. You obviously can't see that I have hair right now. I could be a bold gentleman. But
owning that and you're happy with it, then there's
exactly.
No need.
Yeah.
It's quite crazy that people are reaching out to you to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's just like I said earlier, it's social media. I know hundreds of guys, maybe not hundreds, that's an exaggeration, but I know lots and lots of guys that have had it. And, you know, most of them look really, really, really good. And they're super confident from it. I've just never been one of those guys that really cares about going to the barber every week and doing this and doing that. My hair is my hair. My dad's in his 70s. He's still got hair. You know, so cool. I'll figure it out as I get older. Maybe in my 40s, maybe in my 50s. You know, who knows? Are
what are the most common myths you hear about hair transplants in general? Is there anything that you that really kind of jumps out to you?
The most common one is probably that hair transplants don't work and that you have to keep coming back and having it done again, and that they don't last, that they're not in fact permanent procedures. I think that's the most common one, and then I think that's just because of a lack of understanding of what's happening.
Yes,
it can absolutely feel like if you've had a hair transplant and maybe 3 years later you look at your hair and you think you're thinner than you were, you know, 3 years ago when you had your first hair transplant, and that it can be correct, but it's not the hair, usually it's not the hair transplant that is going, it's the native hair, so the hair that you already had before you had the hair transplant. That's progressive hair loss. So I think that's the confusion there.
Quick question, just off the top of my head, because I remember it from sports and obviously a friend who had a hair transplant, he mentioned PRP. Do you guys do PRP?
We do.
What are your views on that? Do you feel that it is as beneficial, or do you think it's kind of a tool to aid, but maybe not as beneficial as, or the research isn't quite there yet? I don't know.
I think it's a great treatment and an additional treatment for improving your scalp environment. It uses, you know, it basically sort of tricks your body into recovery and helps with cell regeneration, and it can improve inflammation if there is inflammation in the scalp. So it doesn't necessarily address the DHT. So we find the results to be quite anecdotal. We do know it can speed up growth results if you've had a hair transplant.
Yes.
By maybe 4%. So there's some benefits to it. We do a genetic test that I like to encourage people to do if they are really interested in doing the PRP, because that can have a look at your predisposition to your collagen and your markers based on a genetic level. And that can sort of indicate whether or not you might need to address the collagen or your scalp environment with PRP.
Okay, nice. So yeah, it serves a purpose and it's useful. Right. We've mentioned hair transplants. We've mentioned eyebrows. We've mentioned pubic hair. Do you see any other niche transplant areas emerging? Potentially, I don't know, armpits, bottoms, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. Is that chest? I'm just trying to think.
I never say never, because I think that somebody will always turn up and ask. I have been asked quite bizarre things before in consultations. I was once asked if somebody could remove their bottom hair and use that as a donor area, which was fruitless. So no.
More than anything, if you're asking me, but yeah.
I think that there is always going to be a niche area for body modification.
Yeah.
And so something that I have an inkling, or perhaps a trend idea that I think people might be more intrigued in, is sort of creative hair transplants, knowing that you can move hair anywhere. You know, it might be an idea that people are moving hairs to decorate themselves, you know, as a way of, you know, decorating or modifying their body.
Yeah. Okay. Fascinating. Honestly, absolutely amazing conversation, super insightful, lots and lots and lots that we've covered. So I just want to really appreciate and thank you for your time. Where can people find you online? Social media, website, please tell us everything.
Thank you. I'm at the Wimpole Clinic. We're based at 2 Harley Street.
Okay.
Our handles on Instagram is Wimpole Clinic. And my personal one with the Wimpole Clinic is Marie Wimpole Clinic. And for brows, it's the Brow Lift, which is very specialized and specializes in hair transplants for brows.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. You have a great Christmas period.
Thank you.
And we will speak to you in the new year. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Right, guys, great chat that was. Coming up after this short break, I'll be answering some of your listener questions.
FUBAR Radio. Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay. On paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose, and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I wanna find happiness, and I need him to be kind.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
What the hell? With Georges Bertineau. Exclusively on FUBAR Radio.
This is What the Health on FUBAR Radio with me, Georges Bertineau. Time for some listener questions. And guys, if you want to get your questions into us, you can send us a DM at What the Health Show on Instagram, or you can send it to me personally at Georges Bert on Instagram. But we are going to start with five tips for the new year if you're looking to get into or start a health and fitness journey. So tip number one is steps. We can all do it. Well, most of us can, actually. We can all do it. It's really easy to do. It's free. It's low energy expenditure. And simply just going from 1,000 steps to 2,000 or 3,000 steps, or let's just say you're an individual, you do 4,000 or 5,000 steps a day. Just adding 2,000 to 3,000 steps more a day is going to be 14,000 to 21,000 more steps a week. And I can tell you that plus keeping an eye on all the other things I'm going to mention to you is going to change your life. Okay. Number two, tracking food, logging food, measuring food. If you haven't lost weight or your goal is to lose weight, a calorie deficit is the most important thing and the only important thing. It is energy in versus energy out. If you do not track, log, measure, and I'm going to add one more in, take pictures of your food, you will struggle. You have to have an idea of what you are consuming. Do not use these apps where you take a picture with AI and it goes, oh, this is how many calories it is. That is a farce. That is a lie. I took a picture of that once and it told me I was eating 200 calories and I'd measured it and it was about 700. So track your food, take pictures, log your food. Three, hydration or water, okay? I have clocked something. In the morning on the tube, when I come into the station, no one drinks water. They might have it in their bag. I am yet to see, in a whole year of presenting this show, someone drinking water. Coffee? Yeah, great. But fluids. We are made up of like 80% fluid. Please drink more water. It will drastically help you feel a lot better, a lot healthier, and a lot happier. Weights. Weight training. Do not use weights as your main driver towards a calorie deficit. You need to use weight training for strength, for mental health, for body recomposition, and to build muscle tissue. If you improve your body composition, you might weigh the same, but your fat has gone down because your muscle has gone up. That's why you've stayed the same weight. And number five, sounds silly, hire a coach or speak to a coach. You don't have to hire a coach. There are lots of things out there. I would say don't get stung. There are lots of very, very expensive people out there who don't give you very much for your money. Remember, an online coach is better than a PT. And PTs, if you hear this, I'm sorry, but it's so factually correct. There are 23 hours that outside of the gym, you're helping someone for 1 hour. You need help as an individual consumer, someone who's struggling with your goal in the other 23 hours. That is where you make the mistakes, not for that 1 hour in the gym. Just because you have a PT and they push you doesn't mean you're burning that many more calories. You should really focus on everything outside of the gym, and then the gym and everything else will help you from there. So they're the five tips. Steps, track your food, water, weights, and speaking to a professional, a coach, or hiring a coach. Right, we are short on time, so I'm going to answer some of your list of questions. Remember, guys, send them in. Question number one. I can't really afford a gym membership in the new year. Is it actually realistic for me to get in shape without going to the gym? Be honest. Yes. Literally just said it in my last bit. You are struggling with the 23 hours remaining in the day, not that 1 hour you spend in the gym. And that's if you're going every day, which a lot of people don't. I would recommend 3 to 6 sessions a week. So, yes, super realistic. Steps are free. Exercising outside or at home is free. YouTube videos, free. Shopping and buying healthy food isn't as expensive as being out of shape, overweight, unhealthy, or in hospital because your health is so bad. So, hope that helps. Right, next question. As a woman, can I get toned arms without looking too muscly / bulking? Yes, you can, because building muscle takes a long time. In your first 3 years of going to the gym, if you do everything correctly, if you have great genetics, even if you don't have great genetics, you can make incredible progress. And when I say incredible, I mean we are talking more gains than you'll probably make in the following 5 years after those 3 years. So you need to understand you aren't going to get bulky overnight. If you've got really good genetics and you've got good muscle tone and you're super lean, yeah, great. You're going to look pretty good pretty quickly. But that is 1%, maybe even less than 1% of the whole entire world. So you will not get bulky arms. You will increase your muscle mass. And just so you know, when you stop training a muscle, it does get smaller. Now, muscle memory comes into play. So when you start training it again, it does grow. But technically, if you get to a size and you don't like it, just stop training it. Like, don't put as much volume into it because that's going to drastically help. Next question. Why do I never feel my glutes are sore after doing glute exercises? Because whoever you are and whoever sent this in, you aren't doing enough. You aren't lifting heavy enough. I said this to one of my clients this week. I said, if your first rep looks like your third, second, and last rep, you are doing it wrong. You have to make sure your reps do not look the same. You have to make sure that each week, let's say, okay, I lift 60 kilos, 12 reps. I have to go up. I lift 80 kilos for 8. I'm going to lift that until I can get 12. Okay? That's my advice. Right, guys, that is it. That is it from me. Thank you to our fantastic guests. That was Kenny and Marie Royce. Thank you for joining us today. A reminder that you guys can download the app and listen each week, and you can follow us on social media. We are at What The Health Show on Instagram. If you guys are after any help in the new year and you want some help with your health and fitness goals, I do provide a top tier coaching service. No BS. Hold your hand. It's problem solving. It's personalized to you. None of this copy and paste rubbish. You can contact me at George Burt on Instagram. The show is also available to listen back to on all good podcasting platforms. A massive thank you from me, and I am back next week, 11 a.m. for another jam-packed show. I'm Georges. Thank you for listening. I want you to have a great day. Love you. Bye.
Foo Bar Radio.